So DLF has asked the DLF podcast to do a live read. I don't do those. I don't sell advertising space. I don't try and sell anything. But DLF is my home. It is my family. So I'm going to do them a solid here. Instead of putting the other podcasts from DLF ad at the top of Dynasty Crossroads, I'm just going to do this here live read. Again, I'm not going to be paid to do it. I just think DLF's awesome. They got an awesome thing going on, and they asked, and I agree with it, so why not? Let me see here. I got to pull it up. You can tell I'm real professional about this. All right, so DLF would like you to know that if you are... God, can't do this properly, can I? Tired of the same old Dynasty format? Think you have what it takes to be a real champion? DLF has partnered with Safe Leagues and Commish Extraordinaire Scott Fish, hey Scott, to create a brand new DLF Champions Cup Series. That's DLF Champions Cup Series, just in case I stumbled that. In the DLF Champions Cup Series, you're matched up in a Superflex Tight End Premium with points and payouts awarded each year. Nice. The bonus is that every third year you your cumulative points go up against a larger field to see who wins the Champions Cup. That's a neat idea. Claim a team today and begin your journey to hoist the Champions Cup and claim $1,000. Wow, cool. That's the grand prize. Come prove it, I guess, is what they're saying. It seems like a pretty cool competition. DLF's running it along with Scott Fish. Actually seems like a lot of fun. So if you're interested in that, please hit up DLF, Scott Fish, or the DLF Champions Cup Series. You can find it on dynastyleaguefootball.com/safeleagues. Thanks very much. Let's do a podcast now or something, right? I think more people should be playing redraft. That's basically the thought that runs through my head every time I run across one of these veto threads of whether this is vetoable or whether it's destabilizing to the league or how do we protect the league. Like, maybe you should play more redraft. Because the difference between redraft and dynasty is that in dynasty your mistakes are worse and hurt longer and are harder to make up for. It's not that the league lasts longer. Like, I played redraft a lot, and I still enjoy playing redraft. And in the leagues where I... Actually, I don't have any redraft leagues right now. I switch them all for Dynasty, because I'm trying to concentrate on Dynasty. And that's part of the same problem. Like, redraft is really fun. You get to reset every year, learn lessons, do it better the next time. Dynasty, you don't get that. You have to rebuild, which is an overused term. And everyone has a different strategy, and most of the people talking about how to rebuild don't really understand what it's for and how to do it, in my opinion. A lot do, obviously. But, yeah. It's not about age, damn it. It's about building a better team, full stop. Anyway. But yeah, the difference between Dynasty and Redraft isn't that Dynasty is longer. I mean, a Redraft League can exist as long as a Dynasty League. The same players in it, new player every now and again, sure, the same thing happens in Dynasty. The difference is you keep the same players, which means if you drafted the wrong players, you're in a lot of trouble. Come year two, in a Dynasty, whereas in a redraft, you get to learn from it, reset, redo it. It's not easier, there's less stress. Nowhere else is less stress, considering vetoes again. There's no need to worry, well, if I'd known that player was really high on this type of asset or that type of player, I could have maybe offered that trade myself. I think that's what most veto is about. Man, I wish I'd gotten that trade. Tough. And I know too, like, that's why I'm cutting back and really trying to concentrate, and that's why I said it relates. Like, I can't spend... Dynasty is about grinding. It's about obsession. It's about trying to connect with this game and the people I enjoy playing it with to an extent that really is unhealthy. Like, submitting waiver claims at 2 a.m. when really you should be in bed, or reading, or like 10 p.m. when you should be reading a story to your kids, but you just gotta make sure you've got the right bid in and on you know, Keelan Doss this time of year. Like, I mean, it's not about forever, it's about taking the level of effort you need to put in to another level. And that's the other another reason vetoes don't make sense. It's like, that guy was better at building a relationship of communication, establishing a trade conversation and getting it done, instead of reading his kid's bedtime story. Or, like, that's not what fair is in a dynasty league. In a dynasty league, fair is no collusion. Like, outside the league bargaining for inside the league moves, essentially. Like, you drop this guy, I'll pick him up. Everyone will think it's just a waiver claim and I'll wash your car next week. That's collusion. Or I'll give you money. Whatever. Dynasty isn't about the league lasting longer. It's about your mistakes hurting harder and more of your life being devoted to having to stress about it. And if someone else does it more, that's why it's a grind. That's why I use the word grind. I'm just out here grinding. It's just time. It's a more stress and it's constant and there is no off season. DLF tagline. This is a DLF podcast, by the way. Like, that's the difference. That's it. Not that the league lasts longer. I mean, when you really get into Dynasty, when you reach an even player base, because most people listen to this, probably grinders, man. You're putting in the time in the off season to listen to Dynasty podcast. You're already a grinder. You're in here. You're with us. When you reach an even player base, that's how the league gets sustainable in terms of owners coming in, coming out, and fairness. Like, everyone has a decent shot, to the point that if a weird trade goes down, your first question is, what don't I know about that player? Not, oh, man, he traded Alvin Kamara for a second because he thinks rookies are cool. Like, if that move's happening, you're playing in the Pee Wee League, and that can be fun too. Don't get me wrong, playing whatever league is fun to you. But if you're playing Dynasty, vetoes and most of the rules I hear about sustaining the league and making sure the league is fair to other teams, most of that is misunderstanding that Dynasty League should have an unequal distribution of success and value. Come 3 years, there should be three teams that have kicked the stuffing out of everyone else, and everyone else has to take their licks. That's the fun of fantasy football. You get proven right or wrong a year or 2 years or eventually in 3 years. And if someone's kicked the stuffing out of everyone, it's not because the league was unfair and you got unfair trades. He just made that. She just made that. They just made that happen. You didn't. Probably because you're a more well-balanced human being who wasn't initiating relationships and trade talks instead of, you know, spending time with your family. And that's good too. But it's not unfair. That's the struggle of Dynasty. And when you get to an even player base, where if you're listening to this podcast at this point in the offseason, your even player base is probably looking at edges like establishing trade relationships better than someone else, getting in before someone else, or understanding another edge. Which brings me to actually some fantasy football content instead of my rant that's really bothering me while reading the veto thread today. Vince Jansen, he's actually a finance guy and a data grinder more than a football grinder, but he's interested in us. He's pretty cool. I've been following him for a while. He's got interesting science-y stats type information. He recently posted a thread and he tagged me, and not just me, but a bunch of other people, like Frisco Josh, FF Zinger, also DLF, Mike Clay, Matt Spencer, Ben Baldwin, you know, the big names and me, basically. His point in the thread, and I'll link it in the show notes because it's a really interesting one. To quote his first tweet, the progression of fantasy football projections is basically at the point of individual stock projections we were at in the 1900s. I don't know what that means, but I know what fantasy football projections and the state they're in right now. The analogy here is that most fantasy football analysts perform some analysis and calculation not dissimilar to a discounted cash flow analysis. I don't know what any of that second part means. But he goes on to explain it in the relationship to fantasy football, and I came to understand what he was saying, is that we're good enough at it that it's an efficient market, which is essentially what I was saying the last two podcasts. Which is that consensus rankings actually tend to be pretty good. I actually cottoned on to some of this line of reasoning, not knowing it was a finance thing that happened once. Last offseason, when I wrote an article about where we've been successful and unsuccessful at drafting top 12, top 24 players at each position, and where we could see regression. Like 2 years ago, we were extremely efficient about projecting the top 12 running backs. It wasn't that there were more, that there were better, or the running back boom that everyone predicted. Like, that was nonsense. What happened was we just got it extremely right. Like, 96% of the running backs that we drafted in the top 12 ended up in the top 12. So I went back and looked, and I found that normally we get three of them getting injured, missing the season, and that creates a lot more variance, or a lot less success, and that's why it normally felt worse. It wasn't a running back boom, we just got more accurate and there were less injuries. And it regressed in 2019. That's why I felt like running backs weren't suddenly booming. It's because we regressed back to our average accuracy. But anyway, I cottoned onto some of the similar logic, and essentially he's pointing the thread here, and he's got a lot of them, to be honest. But is that instead of getting more accurate with projections, like points per game now predicts fantasy points the next year at an R squared of whatever, which is what we're mostly reading on Twitter. That's a lot of stat analysis right now, as if we... Really, it's just variance, and you should consider everything and create a story, and then you're getting the best picture. You're not really going to find a secret number which projects who's going to be in the top 24 better than anyone else. We understand that pretty well. That's essentially what he's saying about projections. Like, consensus predictions are going to get you probably as close to R squared as you can get, no matter how much time you put into your model, projecting what's actually going to happen the next season. Again, that's what Tanho was showing season before last, when he just used consensus rankings just before the season started to predict points per game, and he did as well as like Mike Clay's model and my projections and pretty much everyone's. That's the efficiency of the market. And essentially what he's saying, therefore, that the next step, or the step in finances at least, was to look where the mistakes most commonly come from. If I'm quoting him right, I think that's what he's saying. So yes, we're efficient, but we most commonly make mistake here or there. And when, like I said, I cottoned onto some of the similar reasoning, when I looked at ADP, what I found was that more running backs finish inside the top 12 that are drafted outside the top 36 than any other position. So that's actually where you can get an edge. Not because the projections are wrong or inefficient or unreasonable, like we're using good data to get the right top 12 reasonably, or based on the median, if you like. But because of injuries, obviously, and this is why it made sense to me, and what I was kind of looking for, though you try not to look, you try to just find, right? But I was kind of trying to make sense of how the market, or how the conversation around running backs didn't fit what I thought. Like, there was too much value talk of running backs with a top 24 ceiling. Like, we got to have running backs. Like, no. They didn't fit what I felt. As a player, what I was looking for is, why is that? And the reason was because more are coming inside the top 12, outside the top 36. So those top 24 running back 13 to 24, don't have the ceiling of running backs being drafted a lot later. And that's a big round difference. That's running backs being drafted rounds 5 to 7 versus rounds like 10 to 14. That's a lot of value difference for running backs, for players that actually jump into the top 12 a lot more often than other positions. But again, because of injuries, because of Alvin Kamara's, Alvin Kamara at one point, but really because of the Austin Ecklers, the Danny Woodheads. That happens more often, that one season variance. James White finished top 5. Didn't he? At one point, top 7, something like that, a year or two ago. And that's the explanation for the way the running back position feels when you're playing. And so that's a common mistake. Even though our projections are accurate, the market is efficient, we commonly make this mistake, or this common variance happens, was the way my article was framing it, in that if you're prospecting for value at running back, you should ignore the top 24 running backs and just hammer the early running backs, and then you hammer the late running backs. Whereas wide receiver wasn't progressing into the top 12 or even the top 24 at the same rate outside the top 24. We make few of those mistakes, which is why I think it's mostly about injury more than anything else. And what Vince is saying in his thread, I think, is that we have to actually get the next stage of, now we have an efficient market, is looking for more of those edges. So all needs to be tested. I don't think it's a perfect comparison. I mean, like I was just saying about Dynasty, there are 11 losers and one winner. That's not really the way that stocks work. Like, lots of people can make lots of money in a stock market. There's a distribution rather than a pass-fail, a yes or no, winner, loser. It's a loser's game. It's fantasy football. Most of us lose every year. So it's not a perfect analogy, but it is interesting to think about. Instead of trying to beat the market by being better at projection or better at valuation, it's instead looking for where the edges in that value lie. So instead of going through player evaluation, which we may have reached currently a height with, or projection beating, let's just call it beating. I'm going to use my own damn vocabulary instead of all this nerd talk. Like beating someone and guessing who's going to be in the top 12. We're actually pretty good at that. So instead, you should be looking for where do we get that wrong. And the other thing this reminds me of is J.J. Zacharyson pointing out that we most often get the handcuff wrong. I think that's a similar type of reasoning here. Instead of looking at players, he was looking at the bets and where we get them wrong often. And what he was saying is that we normally draft the running back, the handcuff running back normally turns out to be a running back we don't draft as a handcuff running back. And so I think that's a similar line of reasoning. So that's another way you could look at it. And so far, both revolve around running backs. And what Vince's challenge is to go find more of those. Instead of trying to find R-squared variables to next year points, instead we should be looking for where does that most often go wrong despite the efficient R-squared, the efficient success we're now having at projecting who should be top 12, who should be top 24. Because the median doesn't work, we're trying to capture that variance. And so it's a really interesting thought process. And again, those are the ones I know of so far. And he tagged everyone so that hopefully they can go find some more, I guess. And apparently, I had never thought about it this way, but Vince is saying that, and his ad is at Vince_R_Jansen, J-A-N-S-E-N. Again, I'll post a thread in the show comments. That essentially Frisco Joss's air yards model, which is one of the big revolutions, I think. I don't know, I'm not a DFS player big time. I've played it for fun a little bit. Used a sheet or two to try and help other people play it for fun without getting completely hammered by the market, which is even more strict, I guess would be the word, with what happens to losers. Anyway, but Frisco Josh's air yards model is essentially the same kind of reasoning, which is looking for where it normally goes wrong. I hadn't really thought about it that way. I don't fully understand how it would be looking for where things more often go wrong rather than to accurately project what happens. But it's an interesting way of thinking about football and looking for edges. Like, you can take the consensus rankings, or ADP is another way of thinking about it, instead of a value or market. So consider the ADP pretty good at this point. If you're looking at DLF ADP, you've got pretty good ADP. It's pretty hard to get better than that based on the median. I mean, there are a few lone rankers that I would argue with, and that's what we're normally doing on Twitter and in podcasts. We're arguing about individual ranks. But we've gotten good enough at it that ADP is pretty efficient. That's what he's saying. It's pretty good. So instead of trying to find the best ranks, what you do, or what we should start doing, is looking for where do we get them wrong despite them being very good. And again, just the two I know for sure that I researched is, one, running backs drafted outside the top 36 finish inside the top 12 more than any other position consistently over time, over the last 4 or 5 years of DLF ADP. And J.J. Zacharyson's comment that research that found that backup running backs often aren't the backup running backs that we want. The running backs we use to handcuff players normally aren't the running backs that we want, and so it's better not to do it, or to at least do it to other players' running backs. Tight ends, wide receivers, I know, we got to go find some and test this process out a little bit. So I'm going to be trying to find other people to try and do that, and I'm going to be looking for this line of logic more on Twitter and in articles to try and see if there's some extra edges on top of, to use our success, in a sense, against each other. I also kind of like that idea. You're good, now I'm going to use that against you. That sounds fun to me. Because this is where, despite the fact you're really good at projecting, you often get it wrong. So I'm going to look, I'm going to, what would be the betting term there? It's a hedge, right? I'm going to hedge against that because often it goes wrong. I think that's interesting. Anyway, kind of a all over the place type of episode, but it's mid-doldrum season, man. I just thought I'd bring some thoughts to you. Next week, going to have a person on, Zach Reed. We're going to have an argument about a player. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hope you can check it out. Thanks for coming and listening to me rant for as much of it as you may have listened to this week. I will talk to you again next week. Thanks very much.
Bye. Yeah. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, though. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Picking my nose, don't really know if I like that. Picking their brains, got their lanes, but I like that. Picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, Jake got that I like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken or crow, crossing the road. Go, clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, though. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, though. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical.